J6, number 7A.
So we can see how wonderful really this science that Mrs. Eddy brought forth through Revelation, how it is in that spiritual realm, which begins to be just outside of anything the physical has ever tried, science has ever tried to explain to man, and totally outside of anything mental science will ever try to explain to man. It is just beautiful. One should begin to feel that tremendous freedom and the burden of life lifted off of us. It's wonderful. Like Jesus said, my burden is light. You may think I have a burden, but it isn't. I just am a child of this infinite one, just living out this divine infinite calculus. So bringing out this teleological purpose, telos, far ain, being made known. So if you look up these definitions, and I have some from Merriam-Webster, teleology just means then the philosophical study of the evidence of design in nature, or the doctrine that ends are immanent in nature, or a metaphysical doctrine explaining the phenomenon of final causes. And we see that final causes just means something that is the end or purpose of a process. Teleology means the fact or the character of being directed towards an end or shaped by a purpose. So you see, we're all being directed towards an end or shaped by a teleological purpose of God. That's why Mrs. Eddy couples those two synonymous terms together, principle, and doesn't just leave principle by itself. But when principle operates, it's a principle which is love. It's a principle which then is love. Oneness, causality, huh? The oneness of being brought out, the wholeness of being brought out, the final causes being brought out in our life. And any other principle in the world, we don't necessarily say it's love. I mean, the principle of physical science, which brings forth the atomic bomb, you know how Teller and some of these people who were in on the working on the atomic bomb, and some of the early ones who quit their work because they could see they brought forth something, a monster. Through the physical science, they unleashed a monster. And all those scientists at work, many of them with the bringing forth of that bomb, they were horrified on what it could do in a non-loving way for mankind. It would bring about the destruction of the earth. That wasn't a principle which is love they could see behind their work. But there's nothing that the principle God can ever bring forth that would destroy. It's a principle which is love, see? It brings out perfection and only operates to bring out perfection. So more and more we begin to see that there is this cybernetic process happening to us, and we respond and welcome it with understanding. Now, as we see this in the spiritual, so in the deep structure of being, so it's seen also in the surface structure. Many, many people are beginning to feel this cybernetic process in their lives, even if it's just on the mental realm. For example, Claude Levi Strauss, in his book Myth and Meaning, a writer and thinker, has this sense that being is happening to him, that he isn't an originator, he's not a creator, but things happen to him. It says in his book, I don't have the feeling that I write my books. I have the feeling that my books get written through me, and that once they have got across me, I feel empty and nothing is left. I never had, and still do not have, the perception of feeling my personal identity. I appear to myself as the place where something is going on. But there is no I, no me. Each of us is a kind of crossroads where things happen. Isn't that nice? So we begin to experience much more that things happen to us, that man is not the thinker, but he's the thought of God, the experience of God. And we want to be the experience of God. I think we all must be kind of tired trying to figure out what to do from one day to another, aren't we? Or it's much more fun to let it happen and to know that what is happening is always new, and be open to the new, and to welcome the new, and to be fun to do things differently, and just to welcome it. All right, well, that's that big subject of cybernetics. It's a terrific subject. We've just touched on it, but at least it's enough to let us enjoy the feeling of the subject. So now we go forward, and we come then to that whole sense of the Bible in relationship to the study of Christian Science and to the textbook. And so therefore, and to the divine system of reference. So therefore, I gave out last evening this paper on Bible, Science, and Health in Model of Being. And I know you had a chance to look it over. And I did it for many, many reasons. This first point will be to show the role the Bible plays in Mrs. Eddy's life. And if we just pick out a few points, we see here on point two that she shows then that before her revelation, what part did the Bible play? She says in Prose Works, "The Bible educated my thought many years, yea, all the way up to its preparation for and reception of the science of Christianity." So we see that the Bible played a big role in her life. And our next step as we get into the Bible through scientific text interpretation to open up some of its treasures, we will see how that Bible did play a big part in her life, as we mentioned before, that the structure of that Bible, according to the scientific system, is there, and by her going to it so many, many times, we see how it could educate her thought, and it did prepare her thought for the reception of science, because the structure is there, and she was learning it regardless if she was conscious of it or not. Page point 10 in the paper, where the question is, does Christian Science coincide with the Bible? She says, Christian Science understood coincides with scriptures and sustains logically and demonstratively every point it presents. The truths of Christian Science are not interpolations of the scriptures. That means that Christian Science is not adding something else to the scriptures. The truths of Christian Science are not interpolations of the scriptures, but the spiritual interpretation thereof. That's wonderful. The Christian Science doesn't add a new Bible, make it a new Bible. It takes the Bible as it is and gives it a spiritual interpretation, a spiritually scientific interpretation. That's why she says, science is the prism of truth, which divides its rays and brings out the hues of deity. That Christian Science is that prism of analysis, which brings out the many, many rays of deity, the many, many rays and hues of deity that are in the Bible. It's that method of analyzing what the structure of the divine system of reference is, what the structure of God is. It brings out that structure. Point 11, is Christian Science bigger than the Bible? I submit that Christian Science has been widely made known to the world, and that it contains the entire truth of the scriptures, but also whatever portions of truth may be found in creeds. In addition to this, Christian Science presents the demonstrable divine principle and rules of the Bible, hitherto undiscovered in the translations of the Bible and lacking in creeds. So she says Christian Science contains the entire truth of the Bible. But in addition to this, Christian Science gives that scientific principle from which one can interpret the Bible. And then page point 14, especially that last paragraph of point 14 that says, do we need to study the Bible and science and health? And if so, for what purpose? Point 14, the last paragraph there on page 8, in no and yes. It's a no and yes on page 11 on my handout, page 8. She says, if the Bible in science and health had the place in schools of learning that physiology occupies, they would revolutionize and reform the world through the power of Christ. It is true that it requires more study to understand and demonstrate what these works teach than to learn theology, physiology, or physics, because they teach divine science with fixed principle, given rule, and unmistakable proof. All right, so we can go through that paper then and just enjoy all the various other points, and we may get back to it in another way later on. So now we turn to the Bible, which Mrs. Eddy did say, I didn't pick it up there, as our sufficient guide to eternal life. Certainly she has those two textbooks, the Bible and the textbook. We see that the Bible really is, it's one book. The Bible, the textbook, they're one book. And we begin with the Bible. Because as we will see, the science and health picks up from where the Bible leaves off at the 5,000-year period and takes the subject into the 6,000-year period and indicates in Revelation the 7,000 and 8,000-year period. So, therefore, the study of the Bible is indispensable for the spiritual story. It is not a complete story without the Bible. The divine system of reference would not be complete without our work with the Bible, beginning with the first record of creation. So that is what we will do. We will begin with the first record of creation. Now, in building up to the way of our spiritually scientific interpretation of that subject, we will build up to it in a moment. But first of all, I want to talk about the Bible in general. We know that the Bible is a very much edited text, that it had many, many documents to the Bible. There are four main documents. The first document to the Bible would be the Jehovistic document, or the Yahweh document, or the primitive document, which was written about 850 BC. That's the oldest document we have of the Bible. And that begins with the second record of creation. And in this Jehovistic document, we have God called Jehovah. Now, it's important to realize this and to see that the meaning of Jehovah in this early document, Jehovistic document, or which we could call the J document, Jehovah had its old meaning, so to speak. Jehovah was a God of war and vengeance. Jehovah was a God who punishes and curses. Jehovah was a God who is aware of all of our shortcomings. It was really a dualistic God. Then after the Jehovistic document, they wrote then the Elohistic document in around 750 BC. And here God was called Elohim. Now, this Elohim is God has a meaning of a much more spiritualistic concept, a much more spiritual concept. God is not so much the God of war and vengeance. God is much more spiritual, not so anthropomorphic, and it is a one God, a monotheistic God, not one God immense money God, that it becomes just the one God. Then in the Deuteronomic doctrine, which we could call the D document, written at around 650 BC, Here the main point is that God is still called Elohim. And then we go on and see the P document, the priestly document, where there begins to be a big change, a big mutation between the J, E, and D documents. That here, the priestly document is a mutation written around 550 BC when the Israelites were in captivity. And remember I mentioned that it was written around the time of the Greeks, written at the same time around 500 BC or so, when the Greeks were bringing forth their, through human reasoning, their line of philosophical study. At this time, the prophets, through revelation, through working with the divine mind and not the human mind, were through revelation bringing forth the first record of creation. Now, everything is so different about this document. Written in Babylonian captivity, which is always often good for any spiritual revolution to be written in captivity rather than out in the open of the public, that this is a bringing together of the J, E, and D documents. Jehovistic, the Elohistic, and the Deuteronomic documents are all brought together in the priestly document and rearranged and brought out in another form. And the form, especially in the first record of creation, is totally different than the second record, as we will see. The first record of creation has a much more stereotyped presentation than the second record. The first record says, and let there be light, and there was light, and it was done, and that was the first day. And then the second day, and says, and let there be the firmament, and it was so, and it was fulfilled, and that's the second day. It's very bump, 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 very, very factual and very much in a stereotype order. Totally different than the second record, which is just runs together. It doesn't make the differentiation in the breaks as clear. It's in a much more abstract language, the first record is, than the second record. And here, God is totally different in this document, the definition for God. God here is Elohim and Jehovah. Now, that doesn't mean that God is spiritual and material. That the meaning of Jehovah takes on a higher meaning, a different meaning. Elohim is Jehovah. And here, as I say, Jehovah is a totally different meaning, that now Jehovah, in the priestly document, is no longer the God of war and vengeance, but it's the God of the priestly document where God revealed himself to Moses as Jehovah, in the newer, higher meaning of I am that I am. And it is only once in the Bible do we get this expression of God stating what it is as Jehovah, as the I am that I am, where God said to Moses in Exodus 3:14, it says, and God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. So, therefore, the meaning of Jehovah now takes on the meaning of the I am that I am. And Elohim is Jehovah. It's the same thing, Elohim and Jehovah. They're both. That's what God is. Elohim is Jehovah. God is Jehovah. God is the I am that I am. Meaning, God is that which fulfills what he promises. You know, and that was important at the point of soul, of course, there that God identify himself correctly to the children of Israel, because they kept murmuring that God wasn't going to fulfill what he promised. They wandered and wandered and wandered, and they kept feeling that they weren't going to win out on this deal. God wasn't going to, and even Moses was a bit concerned whether God was going to deliver or not his promises. And so when Moses, through revelation, got the definition of God that I am that I am, I fulfill what I promise. And therefore, the I am that I am is a, there is, the Hebrew has no term really for a past and future tense, just a present tense at that time. And so therefore, the I am that I am means I am that I shall be. Or it means, I shall be that I shall be. I am that which I will always show myself to be. I am because I am. I am that I am. It's showing that God is both the subjective and the objective. See, it comes at the point of soul, where reality at its deepest level is that subjective and objective is one. I am as subjective, I am also the objective. I am both, subject and object, as one. That what you see is the subjective, that the subjective is objectifying itself as the object. So, therefore, the subjective and the objective is one, and cause and effect is one. God is both cause and God is both effect. God is being. I am that I am. God is being. And I am what I was. I am what I am now. And I am what I am going to be. God is also the becoming. So God is both being and God is both becoming. So we see then that one has, as a student of Christian Science, we have to be a student of the Bible and aware that there are these big major differences that occur in the Bible that influence and determine the interpretation of the Bible, especially this definition of God. So this afternoon we're going to begin the scientific method of text interpretation for the first record of creation. And we won't, of course, start that now, but we will just talk about the scientific method of text interpretation, which, as opposed to the atomistic method of text interpretation, where Mrs. Eddy showed that Christian Science, as she presents it, gives not her personal interpretation, but a scientific. You see, right there in Genesis, she makes it very clear that what she gives is not her interpretation. See, when she starts to interpret Genesis on page 502 in the textbook, she says, in the following exegesis, each text is followed by its spiritual interpretation according to the teachings of Christian Science, not according to my teachings. That I am showing you how science, the impersonal science, interprets the Bible, not how I, Mary Baker Eddy, has interpreted, but the science that has been revealed to me, those categories of being. I let the principle of the universe interpret the universe. I let the science interpret the universe. I let science, in its principle, in its categories of the seven synonymous terms for God, the fourfold operation of being, the four levels of spiritual consciousness, that divine system of reference interprets the Bible and is now going to interpret this first record of creation. So she did not give another amongst other personal interpretations. She was giving a impersonal interpretation based on a scientific principle, which is based on the categories of God itself, on the principal categories of God itself. Therefore, God is interpreting God. The categories of God are finding the categories of God in the Bible and in the textbook. Because if Revelation wrote the Bible, and through Revelation the categories of being were put into the Bible, then through Revelation those categories of being were revealed to Mrs. Eddy, and those categories of being which were revealed to Mrs. Eddy interpret the categories of being that are in the Bible. They're the same category, like finding like. So that's where we feel in Christian Science that it is these only interpretation. You think of all the interpretations of the Bible. To me, and to it only is logical that if there's only one right interpretation of the Bible, there can't be many interpretations, because it has to be what the author means by it. We see that there's a book out called Validity of Text Interpretation, I believe it is. That's the title. I haven't looked at it for a while, but it's written by a fellow named Hirsch. I believe his name is H-I-R-S-C-H. But in there, Hirsch has written quite a big work there in text interpretation, because he says that in text interpretation, we've really got to get back to wanting the interpretation that the author meant by it, and not what all the personal interpretations are. If an author wrote a book, then what did the author mean by it? Not what does all the critics mean. Because interpretation in the arts and all had gotten away to meaning, well, doesn't matter what the author means by it, it just, whatever means to you, that's all right. And the artists were beginning to say that. Well, it doesn't matter what it means to me so much. What does it mean to you? What do you get out of it? But they begin to see that, no, it's what the author means by it is the right interpretation. And therefore, if the author, otherwise it's all personal. So it's more impersonal if we get the author's meaning, why in the world he wrote it and what the purpose was in the first place. That's the right interpretation. So if the author is God who wrote the Bible and the textbook, then what did the author God mean by it? Not what all these other people think it means, but what did God mean by it? Well, that gets tricky, because they say, well, this is what God means. It revealed to me what God means. Well, it has to be on impersonal scientific criteria that hold up throughout the Bible. And we feel that that divine system of reference in the textbook we see is the same divine system of reference in the Bible, and we feel that we have to let the principle of being interpret itself. So the categories of being interpret the categories of being. So in doing that, we see that we don't interpret the Bible then according to a religious or atomistic method of interpretation.